11 is one of those pretty straightforward chapters, filled with character studies. We're really excited about talking about it this morning, just seeing how people of faith responded to God. But before we jump into that, I just want to kind of back us up and remind us that just prior to this chapter, that the writer has given us an admonition towards faith in verses 35 through 39. Read those with me. He's talking to these brethren who have thought about going back, and he's back into Judaism, and he's reminding them how whenever they first came to know Christ, just the state of mind that they were in, the realization of what was offered to them, the clarity that they had. And he says, don't throw that away. Verse number 35, don't throw away your confidence, which has great reward, for you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. For yet a little while, and the coming one will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who have faith and preserve their souls. And so he again makes this communal statement and reminding them, we are people of faith, we are God's people, and we have every reason in the world to be confident and to hope in that. And so I just want to ask you guys, just for the sake of putting this in the context of everything, he's transitioned to a different part of a conversation here. You know, previously he was talking about Christ's role as our high priest, as our sacrifice, as just the fulfillment of all of these Old Testament things. How has he made the transition from talking about Christ to talking about us? And why is it that we are now part of this conversation? And why is he focusing his attention on our responsibility to those things? That may have been a hard question to lead off with this morning.
That was a hard one to lead off with.
Well, and I'm just asking that because I want to we need to understand how this fits in, because this chapter of faith, I mean, it's almost as if he's talking about a completely different subject, but he's not. He's trying to put the focus on our response, and he's giving, and I'll just tell you, he's giving us these examples of faith so that we can see ways to emulate these people so that we can also exercise our faith. And there's a couple of things that we're going to talk about today from Hebrews chapter 11 in regards to faith, how without faith it is impossible to please God. And so we all are very aware that faith is critical when it comes to serving God and to pleasing God. And in verse number 6, he says it's impossible to draw near to God without faith. And you know, if you remember a lot of the terminology that he's used, this priesthood, this approaching God in worship through the tent, it's all about drawing near to God. And he says without faith you cannot draw near to God. And so I just want to bring that all up at the front, because having understood the work of Christ, our belief system is founded on our demonstration of trust in him. We can't offer the sacrifice to God necessary for redemption. I think he's made that very clear. But Christ can. And so we have the ability to draw near to God through faith. And that's really been God's plan and God's purpose throughout all of time. And part of the reason I read these verses leading up to it is because this quote in verse number 37 and 38, where he quotes the Old Testament prophets, he reminds us that although the mode to approach God has looked differently throughout history, the one thing that has been consistent is that the righteous live by faith. And they always have lived by faith. And they've approached God in faith, not having received the things promised. And we'll talk about some of these things this morning. But I wanted to put this thought in our minds as we begin this morning. There's a plan and a purpose that is not according to our pattern or our timeline, okay, that God has set forth. And the writer of Hebrews has demonstrated what that looks like. And we know from our Old Testament scriptures what that plan and that purpose looks like. And we've seen how it's fulfilled through Christ. And our call of faith is to patiently trust, obey, and endure. And George talked a little bit about the endurance required last week. And so I just want you to consider this morning. If we are unwilling or unable to endure, what does that really say about our faith? And what does that really say about our belief system? And I want to suggest to you a couple of things, that if we don't endure, like these people that we're going to discuss this morning, if we don't take these actions, it says that we don't trust in God's work through Christ. It demonstrates that we do not believe that God exists and that he rewards those who diligently seek him. And consider this, if we always expect for things to happen on our timeline, what does that say about who we really think God is? And who does it demonstrate we believe is truly God? Because if we're not willing to wait on God and on His timeline, doesn't that make us God? If we got everything that we ever asked for, and we're going to see how this plays out in the lives of some of the people of faith. But I just want to suggest to you this morning, we must have faith to preserve our souls. We who truly believe are those who have faith and do not shrink back. And this is our admonition and encouragement. But what does that look like? That's what Hebrews 11 is all about this morning. Faith can sometimes be a daunting task. It can be difficult. We all know that. We've all lived long enough to understand that. But the way God's plan works is that He's not left us without witness, and He's not left us without reason to have faith and to trust in Him. And Hebrews chapter 11 not only shows that it's possible to have faith, but it gives us these patterns and these examples. And so we're going to start off this morning just by talking a little bit about what faith means to each one of us.
So let me ask you this real quick. Why do we need endurance? Because He's talked about that 100 times. Why do we need endurance? I mean, you don't, but I do. Why do you? Let's just assume that I need endurance. Why do we need endurance? Because, man, it's difficult. That's in the fleshly side. Tell me about the spiritual side. It's difficult, right? I mean, there's temptations on the fleshly, on the spiritual side every day. I mean, He wears us out. Our enemy does. And we need endurance. And the only thing that's going to make us through is faith. I think it's interesting just So read that first sentence in that chapter, Daniel.
Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. That's from the English Standard Version.
So the New Living says this: faith is a confidence that what we hope for will actually happen. It gives us assurance about things we cannot see, and I love that. And the New Living, we can't use the New Living. Well, I'm going to read it anyway. Faith is a confidence that what we hope for will actually happen. Don't y'all like that? So faith is, that's not a complete definition of faith for sure, but faith in this chapter is all about a response to God. We respond by our hearts and our minds and our will. We respond by our emotions. Yes, ma'am? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And there's two things in that verse talking about faith. What is inseparable from faith according to that verse? You got to be convicted. Absolutely, man. You got to be convicted and assured of what you believe is true, or you will not make the changes necessary in our lives, right? The reason we'll make changes in our lives is because we believe there's a hell and there's a heaven, and sin is there's consequences, right? That's the only reason. But what's in that verse? That one verse. They're inseparable. Faith in this one is inseparable.
I think the word hope is what you're
looking
for.
So there's this inseparable nature that I have faith in what? You read chapter 11. I know you did because you're great students, right? You read chapter 11. What is it that these people who were our examples, what was it that made them special? That they did the will of God because of what? They believed Him, and they believed what? There's a reward. Yeah, there's a reward, right? There's rest and there's reward and there's something on the other side. And He says, what were they trying to overcome? The hardships of this life, the struggles of them being something that you're supposed to be, right? I mean, do you see that this life really does not hold the value and you are looking for the other life? Or do we have it so good? Let me just ask this. Do we have it so good that really and truly this life means everything to me? I'll think about it when I get old enough that my body is decaying. I mean, I know a lot of people whose body's decaying. I got some family members and they're at a place where they're ready to go because they hurt and they suffer. These brethren, that's not where they were, right? Where were they? Why were they suffering? And they were ready to go on. They were hurting. Why were they hurting? Because they were persecuted because they believed in Jesus. Yeah, George?
So, since I have a reputation, let me just begin by saying, I hope I'm clear under on this.
It's impossible.
Verse 32 through verse 38. Remember, whole
Yeah, the ones that died under persecution, they were victorious. The ones that were victorious in battle, they were victorious because God helped them, right? So you just think about this whole picture of all these people. Now, we're not quite to that. We're still in this faith ideal. But you think about these people that we read about and just what a great example. Once you, when you're reading this example of all these people, here's one thing. You disagree. This would be a great time to disagree. I think what he's trying to get to us is if they can do it. If they can do it, so can I. Isn't that the reason they have this list? He doesn't have the list to say these people are so great you could ever follow their example. Jesus is difficult enough, right? I mean, that's a high bar. He's saying, listen, if these people can do it, and they never quit, and they always, when they were faced with the greatest treasures in the world, he said, Moses said, I won't take it. I'm just going to suffer with the people of God because I know the treasures at the end are going to be more. Isn't that powerful? I want to read a couple of things. One by McClister. He says this about faith. He says, faith is firm belief that the thing not yet possessed actually exists. Right? And that the possession of it is certainly attainable by me. That's faith, isn't it? Isn't that a good... I like McClister a lot. He's a great
David
teacher.
McClister?
Huh?
Is that David?
Yes, yeah. Faith looks confidently at the future and considers the promises of God as sure as if they were already fulfilled. And that's like in chapter 6 and verse 13. That's who we are, right? And then he talks about this not seeing. So we serve a God that we cannot see, right? Our faith says we serve a God we cannot see. We want to go to a home that I have never seen. Is it possible that which you cannot see with your eye is more real than that which you can see with your eye? Is that possible? Have you ever been to something that they made the plane disappear, and your eye said it disappeared? Have you been to a magic show? Right? It wasn't real. And what he says here is about this faith is that which I cannot see is truly real, and I'm going to put my hope in that. Period. And my hope is confident because I believe that he's done what he said. His promises will be true and sure. Any thoughts? Yeah.
You know, would you comment just a moment on the difference between believing in God and believing God?
So, I've talked a lot. Would you like to?
No, go ahead.
You talked about it yesterday.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Take your whack at it.
So here's what the devils believed. They believed God, right? They believed there was a God. I mean, so there's two parts to it. I believe in God, and I believe that he's a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. Plenty of people believe there's a God. Right? What makes the difference between the person who believes in God and the person that's right with God? Yeah, it's the response. It's the response. He preached to a lot of people. He said, don't call me Lord, Lord. So a lot of people call me Lord, Lord, but they do not do the things I say. Right? I have a lot of friends that are fans of God. I mean, they like him. And I'm going to talk about next Sunday in the sermon. I'm going to talk about we love Jesus in the manger. That's a great story. We just don't like him when he grows up. Right? You've read the Sermon on the Mount. I don't like the Sermon on the Mount. I mean, I like the Sermon on the Mount. But it's hard. Right? There's a difference between people who believe in God and the people who really trust in God.
Well, I think we're given some really good examples in the New Testament of people who believed the message, but then you kind of see them faltering with it or struggling with it or not really responding to it. I'm thinking about Paul at the end. Was it Augustus or Festus? I can't ever remember who says, you almost persuade me to be a Christian. You know, he believed the message, but he struggled with what it would cost him. You know, the rich young ruler, right. Similar type things. We see people, they believe in Jesus. They believe in who he is, but they wrestle with this seen versus unseen. And I mean, that's really, I think, what the chapter 11 brings out is all of these people of faith, they're focusing on something that they can't see.
Yeah.
And, you know, we tend to, especially in our culture, our society, maybe it's always been like this throughout the world, but we define success, we define our lives by things that are seen. I mean, this is our reality. I mean, that's how we live our lives, isn't it? And we have to actively consider what that means. And I think that's really where the robe of faith starts coming in, is when we start realizing the futility of all these things that are the substance of our hope. And we start hoping for something better. And that's where Christ comes into the picture. But getting to a point where we consider the things that are unseen is really what this chapter is all about helping us get to.
That's right. Well, let's talk about, we'll go into the actions of the people, because they're in here for a reason. I mean, these examples are in here for a reason for us to understand and try to somehow emulate. So you ready? You want to?
Oh, yeah.
You want to do that?
Y'all don't make fun of my handwriting. Y'all did it last time.
Since you read it, and this is not an unfamiliar, it's probably one of the most familiar passages to all of us. So just look in your Bible in about verse 4. What did Abel do? So Abel believed God. God told him what to do. What did he do? Yeah. He offered what God told him to, right? So he was looked at as God. So God said, I want this kind of sacrifice. So he offered that kind of sacrifice. So he offered, right? Why was Cain not accepted? Well, yeah, God told him to do something. He did something else. Why would somebody look at what God has said and do something other than what God wants? Yeah. Well, I'm going to raise my hand. That's so true. I'm going to raise my hand because me too sometimes, right? I mean, me too. It is exactly how the world is, because he says this and they say, well, it's got to be fine to do this, right? And then once he was rejected by God, then how did Cain feel about the one that was accepted by God? He hated him. Would it be surprising that we would do the will of God that somebody would hate you because you do the will of God? I mean, you wouldn't be surprised at that. I mean, plenty of passages would teach that anyway. Look at Enoch. Why did Enoch, why was he acceptable? And it may be a little harder. Enoch may be. He walked with God. In fact, in Genesis 5, it talks about him walking with God. What does that mean? What does it mean he walked with God? I mean, it doesn't mean that God came down and had legs and walked with him, does it?
Figuratively.
Huh?
Figuratively.
It's figurative, yeah. What does it mean? Yeah. He just did what God said. What? Did somebody say something? Yeah. So all of these things that we're talking about today in the religious world, this is opposite. Right? I mean, you don't hear it. The religious world doesn't say this is about you doing the will of God. You just don't hear that. I'm telling you, this whole chapter, this whole book, maybe the entire book, period, is all about how in the world do we do the will of the Lord? Because we love him and he's our friend.
I think something interesting that I noticed in these first two, you know, some of the other examples we're going to look at, they did some pretty significant things. Abraham, Moses, guys like that. But these two really, I don't know, I puzzled over them because I'm thinking that it's not incredibly significant. And I think he leads off with these just to show it's not about the significance of what we bring. It's about what we're doing, the mindset that we have. Because, you know, right after this is Hebrews 11, verse 6 that says we must believe that he is and that he rewards those who diligently seek him. And, I mean, even in the most insignificant things, because I think it's easy. I wanted to bring that up before we get into the significant ones, because sometimes I think a lot of people are asking, you know, what's God's calling for my life? What significant thing am I supposed to do in my life for God? And it has nothing to do with that. You know, right. The most significant thing that Abel did is he listened to God and he offered a sacrifice,
sure.
At least that we're made aware of. And, you know, if we do that, we could be listed in the Hall of Faith with Abel.
Absolutely.
And it's not about the significance.
We'll ask that question in a minute, right?
Right.
So let's go to Joseph real quick. You've read it. Joseph, what does it say Joseph did? Joseph did a lot of good things, right? I mean, he was a faithful person. But in here, he only lists one thing. What was it? Yeah, where he wanted his bones. Why would he mention, of all the things he did that were unbelievable, why would he mention the bones? Yeah, he looked for the promise. He looked for the city, another country. He said, no, God said it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It was all about he looked for something. He had this hope that God was going to do something that God was going to do. Okay, let's go to Noah. What did Noah do? Am I too loud? Yeah, he built an ark, right? He built an ark. That's a pretty big deal. since there wasn't any rain, right? That's a pretty big deal. It took 100 years. It's a pretty big deal. He's preaching and nobody hears him. It's a pretty big deal because he said, God said there's a bad thing coming and I'm going to build this boat. And I'm going to build it just like he said. What a great example for all of us. What if sometime during the process Noah said, you know, he wants these windows in this one place and that's not where I'm going to put them. Because it'd be better, I'm shorter, and it'd be better to have them a little lower. What would happen with the boat? It probably sank. It just wouldn't have worked. That's not how it works with God. Right? That's not how it works.
Before you move on from Noah, there's a phrase listed among the verses that talk about Noah that says he moved in reverent fear, being warned of future events to come. And I think that's significant, especially among all of these people, because they're considering what's ahead. They're not considering the present circumstances, and I think that's something that's consistent in all of these, especially as we talk about verses 13 through 15, 16, and the end of the chapter. All of these people are looking ahead to something. It's not like he's just, okay, I'm getting ready for this flood. He's looking forward to what's coming and the promises of God and setting his hope on the promises of God.
Well, all of these are some shadow for what we're supposed to be about, and I'm not going to cover all those, but for sure Noah is a perfect example that we move with fear because we understood what the consequences of our sin were, and we got in the water. It's a direct representation, I think, of that same.
Sure.
And there's plenty of places we could go talk about that. But so Sarah's kind of a unique one. Why was she in here? You always have to have a woman or two in here, right? I mean, she's a pretty big deal. Why was she such a big deal, huh? She was barren, but she was to the age that I don't know much about any of this, by the way, but she was to the age, you can't have babies. She didn't have the possibility to have children. There's an age at which you do not have the capability of having children, and what did she think? Now, she circumvented the Lord a couple times, but what did she say? God said, I'm going to. And that's where she's listed here. I mean, she is faithful. He said, I don't care if I'm 500 years old. I don't care how old I am. I'm going to have a child because he promised. Have you ever been tempted to a place that you said, Lord, this is more than I can bear? Have you ever been there? And then you remember the passage that says, he will not give me more than I can bear, and he will make a way of escape. Have you ever been in the middle of a temptation and you said, there's a way to get out of this? I'm telling you, there's a way to get out of this because you relied on the promises of God, right? That's what these people teach us, that he's got promises, right? She said she conceived.
Oh, she said that?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Just follow here, I'm sorry. Following.
Well, the verse says she considered him faithful.
No, that's right. That's exactly right.
Not to put words in your mouth, but that's what the Bible says.
Let's go to Moses. Let's go to Moses. What did Moses do? He did a lot. He's mentioned a lot. Kept the Passover. Right. He gave up the richest country, he gave up power and he gave it all up. He's a direct representation of who? Who's Moses a direct representation of? He gave up the unbelievable glories. Christ, right? Christ, yeah. Let me ask you this. Is it hard to imagine somebody who has billions of dollars saying, I'm walking away from it and I'm going to be destitute, I'm going to serve the Lord? Mercy. So Israel, why did Israel? Look and see why Israel did. What did they do? Yeah, in verse 20, you can look at verse 29 and 30, 29 and 30. What does it say Israel did? They crossed the Red Sea on dry land. Now, why is that a big deal? They didn't have another choice, right? The Egyptians were coming. They were going to kill them. Why would it be a big deal that they walked across with water on both sides, no telling how high? Why would that be a big deal that they crossed the Red Sea? Yeah. 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 we're going in between. It doesn't even make sense that we're going to be killed by the water or we're going to be killed by the Egyptians, but they win anyway, right? Then it talks about that they did what else? What else? I'm sorry. Oh, absolutely. I can't imagine it. No, absolutely. With everything you have.
Everything you own, yeah.
No, I can't. That is beyond my ability to see, clearly. What else did they do? They did something else that makes no sense, too. The walls of Jericho. Yeah, so they went 7 days around the walls of Jericho, and the last day they went seven times around. Let me ask you this. If you lined up and you went around the walls of Jericho seven times in 7 days, wouldn't you some sooner or later say, what are we doing? Wouldn't you? I mean, what? It takes a lot of faith to go 7 days and then seven times and then blow the horns and you say, now what's going to happen? It's a lot like when you get baptized. What is the water all about anyway? Right? What's the water about anyway?
Well, you know, you think about in this time of history too, it was a more combative, I mean, nation established dominance by their military strength. And sure. If you go and you read through some of the stories, like, for example, I was reading through 1 and 2 Samuel this week, and you've got these nations, and it talks about how they plan and they scheme and they go out against each other with 30,000 men versus 20,000 men. And just the way that they would have perceived all this, and here they are going to this promised land, they're all geared up for battle, and God just says, I just want you to walk around. You know, you're not going to lift a finger. And just the what would be going on in their minds and thinking, we're trying to establish dominance here and we're just making laps around the city. Like, what are they thinking about us? You know, yeah. Somewhere inside of them, it didn't make sense. Here is the point.
Well, you can just imagine if I were a warrior and we had to do that, I would not be happy.
I know, I'd be wanting to go get somebody. I mean,
come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, okay.
Did you have a comment?
Yeah, I did. I mean, the idea of people walking around
Joshua. Yeah.
So I always use that as this is what you can do with God, and compare that with what happened over the Judges. This is what happens when you desert God. So
yeah.
Those people were with God. They had faith in God because God had proven to them the promises that He made.
Yeah, and the promise He made that made the biggest difference was He said, this generation will not enter my rest, and I promise you, no matter how many times you pray, they won't. And they did not. They died in the wilderness, and the bones are left there. Think about that, the power of that example. And then a great leader comes, and, you know, Joshua was a great leader, and so was Moses. But
yeah, and that's why they went into the water. They saw Moses do it first.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you bet. Sure. Sure. No, absolutely. So the next thing is this ideal of all these victories. And I'm going to read them to you. It starts in about verse 33. Subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, became valiant in battle, turned armies to flight. Women received their dead who were raised again. So there's all these victories that they had that God helped them do. Why would you think that would be in here as part of this ideal of faith?
Thank you.
Absolutely. The joy was something more. The city that was, right? That's the reason people give up.
I built a boat if I knew that I needed to do it because God wanted me to do it in eternal life.
Sure. Well, I think there's probably going to be many more things that we have to do that are even more difficult than that, from when we forsake our families because we serve the Lord, and when we tell our friends that they're lost and we lose a friend. I mean, just think about all the things that we are called to do that we're sometimes not willing to do, but that's exactly what God wants. Yeah. Somebody.
Yeah. Key point, right?
Come back over here.
All of these people, the person that's not mentioned in these verses is David. And David was known not, well, he had great faith, but mostly he had a love for God. And each one of these individuals, their love for God, I mean, it doesn't talk much about it in Moses' case, but we know that first there is love for God.
What does that mean, so I can understand? Tell me what you're trying to say. Because this book is about faith and deeds and obedience. Faith and obedience, where does the love come in? So kind of, where's that?
I'm trying to say that there first has to be love for God. I'm saying these people aren't doing it because they think God's going to kill them. They're doing it because they want to follow God because they love Him. And in David's case, he was mostly known for his love. But it's so much easier to do what somebody wants you to do when you love. Lord, thy God with all thy heart. And then you'll start, and you'll have faith.
Can I temper that comment with something that I think there's a reason I think it talks about how Noah moved in reverent fear? And I'm thinking about, so I was at a Bible study a couple days ago, and we were studying through Mark, and one of the things you see in Mark is that there's always a fear of the power, of a respect for what Absolutely. God is doing and what God can do, and a lot of these things that He's doing, I mean, they're pretty incredible things that the people are seeing, and you want to be on. And there's a fear that moves us to either say, "Please get away," as in the people, you know, when Jesus cast the demon into the pigs, and they run off the edge, and the people run away from Him, and then these other people, Peter, in fear, you know, realize you're my Lord.
Well, remember Moses, his knees smote upon the other. I mean, this is kind of reverence for here. Because he was fearful of the Almighty God. In fact, in this book, it says it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. Think about it. He's writing to Christians, saying, listen, if you don't follow me, you don't want to be in my hands because the consequences are terrible.
I do have to agree that these people knew what God could do if they did not.
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. Yes, sir. No, sir. It's right.
That was the point I was trying to make, is when you have that understanding. I mean, there's a fear that if I'm not on His side, it's bad times.
It's always like what comes first, the chicken or the egg.
Sure.
Is it the fear or the reverence?
Yeah, I do too.
But, especially as I grew up, and the more I experienced Him, and he loved my dad wasn't a Christian, but he loved me and he disciplined me, and I understand the fear of God and the reverence of God because I had a father who treated me that way.
Right.
Yeah, mostly my point was about the love of God.
Yeah,
and we got over the spirit.
But now, my comment. I want to throw this out. I made a comment earlier in the class about, you know, that really for those who had faith, it really wasn't about what they gained.
Right.
Was done
Even if he doesn't, that's right. No, that's right.
That's a good point.
Yeah, because their love for God was, I put him first in everything. That's that.
This is not about what I'm going to gain. That's the point.
Now, this entire chapter 11 now is about what we're going to gain. It's about the city. It's about the promise. It's about the inheritance. I mean, you think about what these people did, and they served him. Because they looked for something more than this life. And the reason we can't get a grasp of that, because our lives are pretty good, right? I'm telling you, if they weren't this good, we'd be going, oh my goodness, there's got to be something better than this life. That's the reason I'm saying when you really get old, like I have a really close person that hurts every day, and they're just ready to go. Well, we need to be those kind of people before then. That say, man, I appreciate your prayers so much, but when you say, listen, if you can come, would you come now? I'm ready to go. I'm ready to get the rest. I think Daniel and I talked about what is this rest. I'm tired of the temptations. I'm tired of the flesh. I'm tired of living in the flesh that I want to do good in my flesh. There's so much work every day to try to keep it under control. And yeah, thank the Lord for something
for?
Better. Yeah.
There's a comment over here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. Or something you're trying to get out of something, maybe.
So, in time, Matt, the more you study, you see what God has done, and you see how much you owe him.
I'll tell you this. I didn't come to the Lord because I was selfless, I can promise you. But over time, I mean, your love of God grows, and I'm selfless, and I want to put him first. You think about that whole growth process of love anyway.
Yeah.
You want to go to the last question? Because we're about out of time.
Go ahead. You got it.
Let me ask you this, just thinking about all these people who gave up something or they were faithful to him even when the majority of people weren't. You know, Noah's the greatest example. The entire world was against him, really and truly. What has your faith caused you to give up? What has your faith caused you to do? Or just thinking about, you know, this whole book is talking about, you know, faithful in attendance, faithful in how we don't shrink back and all kinds of things. What has it caused you to do that you didn't want to do? That's not who you are. But I'm going to do this because I know that's what God wants. Give me.
Well, let me say this before you. So one of the things that you and I had actually talked about in all this is as you look through these people of faith and the things that they did, they were, for the most part, you know, unnatural. They went against what they would have wanted to do.
Yeah.
And it didn't usually make sense for them to make these kinds of decisions. And we were just wondering, you know, as we look at our lives, what kind of decisions do we make that go against maybe rational thought or our natural way of thinking? Or we look at something and we say, well, if I do that, that just doesn't make sense. I can't do that. You know, do we have those kinds of times in our life when we are willing to make those kinds of decisions when it doesn't always make sense? You know, Abraham, God said, go, leave your country, take your family, go, and I'm going to show you a place. That didn't make any sense. You know, rationally, we might say, well, you know, I'm established here. I've got a job. I've got things going on for me. Why would I leave? Obviously, it's not a direct parallel to us today, but things like we have opportunities and moments in our life where a door is open and where maybe we read something and we feel God is calling us to do this or do that, and we say, well, that just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for me to talk to this person and to break that relationship or to say something that would affect our relationship. You know, do we have those kinds of moments in our life? That's really what you're trying to ask, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'll give you an example. My sister went off she's left the faith, and my mother and dad have withdrawn from her. Do you think they want to withdraw from her? Do you think they want to have this separation and there's not the same? No. They don't want to. Why would they do that? Because that's what God expects. That's what he expects. Think about the things. There are people here that have given up their entire family. Their family won't have anything to do with them because they're Christians. So what have you, I mean, maybe you have an example or maybe you don't want to give an example. What have you done that says, listen, that's not what I want to do, but I'm going to do it for the Lord? What you have those? Any thoughts? that? That's hard. It's hard in a place that there's this many mean people. You know, there are. That's right. Well, some, you know, Jesus says that some of those are going to be in your family. I mean, I think that's true. Some of those are going to be in your family. How you treat them, I think that's so good. Yeah, sure. That's right. Oh, no. This is my sister. I mean, our purpose is to try to bring her back, right? No, absolutely. Anybody else? Yeah.
I had a good job. Well, down here.
Well, there you go. Well, I appreciate that too. I'll give you one last example. There's my brother-in-law preached in Denver, and he converted a man who was very high up in the Coors organization. And so he was baptized, and he spent a year trying to figure it out. And he made a lot of money. He made six figures at the time. That was in the 80s. And he just said, I can't be in this business and be right with God. And he gave that up. Now that's money. I do think families and the relationship with families is hard. But I'm telling you, we're called to be like these people.
That's so, right.
You know, I'm just going to serve the Lord. And may not be pleasant. I'm looking for another reward, another home. And I'm sorry.
Well, if we're called to be people of faith, just the question we kept asking ourselves is, we ought to be. I mean, the only way to be pleasing to God is to be people of faith. And so we ought to be. And so if we were to get put at the end of this chapter, what would it say? Would there be anything to say about us at the end of this chapter? There ought to be. And we ought to live lives that reflect the decisions and the actions that these people of faith took. Whether it's something great like Moses or Abraham or something like Abel or Enoch. Just absolutely. The commitment. I appreciated George's comments earlier just about just we do this mindful. I'm thinking of what Peter said, you know, doing suffering when mindful of God.
Absolutely.
And we ought to live that way. So maybe just something to consider this week. How would you fit into this, or would you fit into that, and what needs to change in order to be a person of faith? So as we're transitioning next week to chapter 12, we could go on and on in Hebrews chapter 11. I'd encourage you to go back and read some of the stories. But we really decided, you know, Hebrews chapter 11 has given us case studies for us, but we call them a list of heroes, but really these are a list of our fellow brothers and sisters in faith. You know, the beginning of Hebrews talks about how Christ came to bring many sons to glory. So these are our brothers and sisters. And as he gets into chapter 12, he once again shifts his focus back on Christ and says, all of them looked at him, and we should also look at him. And so he starts off chapter 12, therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses, all these people pointing to Christ, let us run with endurance the race set before us. And so next week we'll talk a little bit about how God disciplines us, and that the focus necessary to continue to run the race with endurance. So, one day we're going to meet these people.
Yeah. Sure.
Thanks for your comments this morning. I hadn't thought about that. That'll be neat. So, Abraham.